Hey, gang, I want to tell you about True Hemp Science Full Spectrum CBD products. They are fantastic. I've been using them now for a couple of months. I've used their balms. I've used their oils to sleep. And today, I'll be talking about a whole new product. Now, listen, True Hemp Science promises you premium quality, pure ingredients, and true value. They source the highest grade organic hemp from around the world to handcraft the finest full spectrum CBD products. They offer a complete line of CBD products, including full spectrum CBD oils, tinctures, CBD skincare lotions, CBD sports rubs, CBD gummies, and CBD gluten-free chocolates. They number their CBD products to differentiate them by strain, by farm, and by extraction method. Now, last week I was telling you about the number 81, which is great for relaxation and sleep. But today I'm going to be talking to you about number G41. That's full spectrum CBG plus CBDA plus terpenes. Now, this has given me some focus. It has some CBD in it, but it doesn't make you sleepy or tired or foggy in any way. The CBG kind of gives you some focus and it energizes your brain while keeping you calm and cool. You know what I'm saying? People report it relaxes their brain and does not affect cognitive performance. While it is calming, it is less physically so than CBD. It's great for working. It's great for getting your work done. I'm even using it right now. So, gang, how did I get here as partnered with True Hemp Science Full Spectrum CBD products? And if you use the code HDIGH, you will get something special. Purchase $65 worth of regular price products and receive 296 milligrams of number 81 distillate. That's the one I was telling you about. That's great for rest, relaxation, and sleep. Just go to truehempscience.com/HDIGH. For how did I get here? And you can also visit them at their brick and mortar store. That's right. They have a physical location right here in Austin at 505 West Mary Street, Unit C, Austin, Texas. Don't forget, use the code HDIGH. If you're already using CBD products, switch over to this one. I promise it's going to be great. You're going to love it. All these products are great. And the CBG, CBDA is unbelievable. Like I'm telling you, I feel very clear. I feel very focused. I haven't been drinking a bunch of coffee all day, and I'm not all anxious from coffee. You know what I'm saying? TrueHempScience.com, HDIGH. You're not only getting yourself some CBD, but you're helping us out here, right? By using the code HDIGH. TrueHempScience.com. Go get your full spectrum CBD products today. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself,
how did I get here? And now here is your host, Tommy Howdy.
When we talk.
All right. Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys all had a good weekend, whatever it is you did this weekend. I had a pretty good weekend. I played with Skyrocket on Thursday and Friday. I have had some lower back problems, like some pain. And that's been a little tough to deal with. I don't know if any of you struggle with that sort of thing, but it comes every couple of years. I get a little something. But this one's gone on since like Wednesday of last week. And I'm still dealing with some of it today. It's not as bad today. I came to Houston on Sunday to pick up Rosie. I spent the week without my dog, my first like full week without my dog. And man, she was so happy to see me. I was happy to see her. But my aunt has one of those things where you hang upside down. It flips you upside down. You hang. I did that this morning for a while, and that seems to have helped the most, even more than a muscle relaxer. But I find also that the Advil and Tylenol, when taken together, can really like help pain like that. That was the other way I found relief. Anyway, been dealing with this back thing. We all, as Americans, have been dealing with this huge step backwards into this puritanical culture that none of us are wanting to live in, but we have this weird Supreme Court justices that are living in a different era and in a different mindset. I'm in my grandma's backyard, and you can hear Rosie barking. That's what's going on. But yeah, it was a tough weekend on that level. And it's tough to think, like, what's going to happen now? Like, what's going to come in the future? We all saw those weird Clarence Thomas things where he said that he wanted to repeal any sort of, like, rights that gay people have and all this kind of stuff. And this is really, really fucked up. This is not really what America's looking for, I don't think. I think we as a country are looking for more freedoms, at least freedoms over our own bodies, especially women, you know? Fuck, it's just fucked up, right? And there's nothing we can really do at this point except vote, but these are lifelong appointments to these people, so we have to deal with them until they start dropping off and then hopefully start putting normal people back into the Supreme Court. Like, how does that work? I don't understand. So we're stuck with these people for the rest of their lives? We're stuck with that younger lady and the Kavanaugh cat? These guys are just pieces of shit, man. They really are. They're shitty. They're shitty, and there's no really real way around it. They don't think any way like most Americans think, or there wouldn't be such a lack of faith in our Supreme Court. Anyway, that's my... I know you don't tune in to hear what my problems are with America, but I think we're all experiencing a common sort of wave of what the fuck is going on here, you know? Who are these people, and who are they making these laws for? Who are they? Who are they? They're not me, that's for sure. They're not my friends. They're not my family. Well, some of my family thinks like them, but they're idiots. Anyway, it's crazy. It's crazy. All right, that's it. So, look, we all have to figure out how to deal with this, and I guess we'll deal with it on a day-to-day basis. But hugs to everyone is all I have to say. We're kind of got this Supreme Court leadership that's out of touch with what America really wants, and we just have to figure out how to deal with it. Okay, that's my rant for the morning, gang. I have a great show for you today. Michael Mancuso, who is the founding member, the guy who started the band Steady Legend, Austin Funk Band Steady Legend, is my guest on the show today. Their brand new EP, Say Hey, drops this Friday, July 1st, and they are celebrating with a release party Saturday, July 2nd at the Green Jay Bar. You can find them at steadylegend.com. Get in there and check it out. Now, I didn't really know Steady Legend. I'd never met Michael before, but I'm sure our paths have crossed, like, since he's been here. He started the band in like 2011, and he moved here back then from North Carolina. Sorry, I'm all confused now. Anyway, Say Hey, this EP, which is fantastic, was produced by the legendary producer and engineer CJ Erickson, who lived in Austin for a while. But they did this EP with him a couple of years ago in 2019 and waited through the pandemic to figure out when they're going to release it. And they're finally releasing it this Friday. Fantastic EP, Say Hey. You can find them at steadylegend.com. Get involved. They're a single... Bad Boy is available now wherever you stream and download your jams, and you'll hear it in just a minute when I stop talking. Michael and I have a great conversation about his journey as a musician from North Carolina to Austin and starting Steady Legend and sort of the different roads his life has taken him. Great, great conversation. Great guy. Very, very talented. Like, he writes all the horn arrangements. He writes all the arrangements of the music. He always has, and sort of like run the band. And he is the only guy left from the original version of the band. So the band is, Steady Legend is Michael Mancuso. And so I'm really glad I got a chance to sit down and talk to him. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Steady Legend leader Michael Mancuso. Let's get down. Arrange all those horns and stuff?
Yes, sir.
So where did you go to? You went to the music college?
I've been music college. I started playing trombone when I was 10 years old.
Okay.
And I played that in the school band, and I learned how to read music playing piano when I was pretty young. I was about 4 when I started playing the piano, started taking piano lessons. So
you had a good grasp of it going into it.
I come from a musical family. My uncle was a touring bass player for a bunch of blues artists, so my parents kind of figured I was going to be musically inclined and kind of suggested that I get into it.
Okay. So piano, trombone, were you a band geek?
Geek's a strong word, I suppose.
I know it is a strong word, right? It's mean. I wasn't in band.
Yeah. I would say I was a band aficionado.
There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of my friends were in the band.
I mean, it was like, you know, some people are athletic, some people are brainiacs. I was musically inclined. It was always going to be in my future.
Yeah.
I always knew that.
You had a piano in your house and stuff.
Oh, yeah. We had an upright, and we had an actual old, like, 70s Kimball organ, and I spent a lot of time messing around with that. And I grew up going to church. My dad brought me to church, so I learned a lot of types of church music as well, just based on the books that we had.
What kind of church?
Baptist.
Okay.
And yeah, I'm not religious anymore.
Okay.
But that foundation in music, a lot of music theory was created through the church. So that's, I always think that's a good foundation for.
Sure.
And I think that's reflected in the horn parts I write. Like every horn player I've ever had who's come through the band, and there's been a lot of them. If you know horn players, they're always bouncing around.
Yeah. So you started this band in 2011.
Yes.
Okay. Well, let me find some kind of line of questioning here. First of all, your EP is great, and you worked with CJ.
Yes. Are you familiar with him?
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, CJ.
CJ's been on the show. He was on very early on, like I think even like maybe number 15 or something.
Oh, wow. He's an OG.
Yeah, an OG.
I feel
OG.
Like we probably know a lot of mutual people. I've lived in Austin as long as I've had the band going.
Yeah, yeah. See, he's great, CJ.
Yeah, he did an excellent job on the EP. Honestly, I was... like he went above my expectations, especially on the lead single.
Where did he move to?
I think he's out in LA.
Okay.
He did live here.
I was
for
very
a while.
Sad when he moved because we connected and then we would hang out and go to a place.
And now you can't go to that place.
And now that place is, and then he's like, and I saw him at a place one time. I'm like, hey man, give me a call. Let's hang out. He's like, I don't live here anymore. I was like, what?
Just drifted away.
I think U2 took him away at first because they were doing
something.
Yeah,
he went
he
on the road with
there.
Them. For, yeah. Like I looked at his, you know, his Instagram history when I was, you know, thinking about, I actually like talked to a bunch of different producers when we recorded the tracks, and I'm an audio engineer. That's what I went to school for. So I did a lot of the like, you know, meat and potatoes engineering for the recordings. I have a buddy who runs a studio in East Austin. It's called Tall Sky Studio, and he plays in a local reggae band called Lion Heights. I'll give them a plug because I like them. And he gave us a good rate at his studio. And
what if I went back and just bleeped that out? You would hate me. I just thought about it. I was like, maybe I should charge people for these clips. No, I'm just joking.
No, I hear you.
What was their name again?
Lion Heights.
Lion Heights, baby.
Yeah, they're in the reggae scene, which, you know, Steady Legend hasn't been in and out of the reggae scene, you know, because we had an old singer who had a more reggae friendly sound, and now, you know, Annalisa, who our current singer is, has a more soul-y, bluesy,
funky
vibe.
I love her voice, man.
Yeah, I think she sounds great. I think she sounds
really
like Dua Lipa.
I'm not that, you know what's weird? I'm 53. You know what I mean?
And Dua Lipa's like, a huge artist. You've definitely heard her music.
No, I know I've heard her. I just not enough to be like, oh, it sounds like Dua Lipa. It's like she's got a big voice, Annalisa. She came up in the church as well,
yes,
right?
She did. Yeah, she was a church singer. And
does she continue churching?
I believe she, you know, I feel like a lot of people, this is something that happens with church. You have a love-hate relationship with it. And I will not speak to her relationship with church. I just know that she has been in church and not been in church before.
Yeah, that happens with some guys. I'm Catholic and like Cuban, so it's like the whole Latin, you know, fucking saints at your house.
Yeah, I'm Italian, but I didn't end up Catholic, but a large piece of my family is.
It's super dramatic
Catholic.
And stuff. So then when you go to like this Baptist stuff, you're like, or even like I had a girlfriend whose parents went to like a cool church.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, rockin', hey, everyone ready to party? And you're like, this isn't a party. Guy fucking died.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
we're all supposed to be sad. And the music is very sad.
Yeah. I mean, that's the difference of like Catholicism is that the guilt.
Yeah.
That's what my dad was, you know, grew up Catholic. And he's like, the biggest difference between baptism and Catholicism is the guilt they make you feel.
Well, that's why some people get it. I mean, I got out of it because I was like, this is crazy. I'm not going to feel bad for every fucking thing I do.
Yeah.
I feel bad enough. Like they instilled it in me.
It's the weight of Christ is on you.
Right. Okay. So, all right. You're from North Carolina.
Yes.
Where in North Carolina?
I moved to Charlotte when I was 14. I've actually lived all over the country, but North Carolina is kind of where I came of age, I would say. And then after high school, I moved to East Carolina, which is in Greenville, North Carolina. I went there for less than
a
year.
A good place.
Greenville? You've been to Greenville?
Yeah. It's like Spartansburg.
No, Greenville, North Carolina.
Right.
North Carolina is in the middle of Eastern North Carolina.
No, I've only been to Greenville, South Carolina. Sorry, you're right.
That's a fine place. Upstate South Carolina, Western North Carolina, great place. Eastern North Carolina, I have another love-hate relationship with that region, but my family loves it. My parents live in Wilmington. My sisters live in the Raleigh-Durham area, so North Carolina is still very much a part of my life. But I went to college in Asheville. I went to the audio program there. I minored in trumpet.
What a beautiful place to go to school.
Love
Jesus
Asheville.
Christ.
I love Asheville. We were just up there for a wedding, and I miss those mountains so much. That part of the country has just got some magic to it.
Dude, totally. What's it, Biltmore? That's the hotel.
Yeah, that's the hotel there. Yeah. But yeah, I still have a lot of friends there. I linked up with a bunch of them. I went and saw a band that they're called Dub Cartel, and a buddy of mine who plays trombone, and he's kind of like maybe the band leader of this group. And I got to sit in for a couple tunes with them playing bass, so that was really cool.
That's awesome. Do you know Ian Moore? You know that guy?
No, it doesn't sound familiar.
I toured with him, and we played some theater there, but I can't remember what
there's
it was.
The Mothlight. I don't know if that's dude. Still up.
I'll never remember.
I have another buddy who they just had an album released there, and they're like an electronic dance band band, and they had an EP release or something, and they sold out the venue. So I think it was at a theater around, I can't remember what the name of it is.
Right. So did you ever, like in high school, did you go to do rock and roll stuff?
I played in a ska band.
Okay.
In high school.
Nice. Mid-90s?
Early mid-2000s.
Okay. So was there another ska revival during that? Because there's a
lot
of
ska revivals. To make one.
Yeah. But they come. Like, there was one when I was a kid.
Yeah, the 90s had, you know, the third wave ska. You know, they had No Doubt, and they had, you know, Real Big Fish, that kind of third wave.
Right. My cousin Emily was involved in that.
Yeah,
she's younger than me. She was involved in that.
You might have just missed it. So you're solid Gen X.
Well, I was there for like the specials and
oh,
and
you're
like,
two-tone.
And like was it the specials that sang One Step Beyond?
Yeah.
No, that's Madness.
Madness. Madness did One Step Beyond. The specials did Nightclub and Ghost Town. It's
right,
coming
right,
like a ghost town.
Yeah. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, it's all stuff. I mean,
so what was that ska band called? I love high school band names.
Andy and the Jivers.
Oh, that's a good name.
Andy's one of my best friends, and he was the one that like knew I'd play trombone, and he went to my high school, and he was like, "Do you want to come play in my ska band?" And I was like, "What's ska?"
But it's cool, right?
Oh, I loved it. It was a great chance for me to just get out and play gigs, and we played a lot for a high school band. Like, we were actually pretty good. Like, my friend Andy, he's still playing in several different bands. He's got his own reggae band. He lives in Charleston, and I follow him on Instagram, and they're playing all the time. They won Charleston's Best Reggae Band, so I had a good, like, I've always had a good crew of musicians around me ever since I started playing. That's really important, I think.
Yeah. So did you have ideas of being in a band before they asked you to be in the band?
No.
With your promo? Then you got in the ska band, and what kind of gigs were you playing? Like high school people gigs?
The first gig we played was at some
people gigs.
The high school
what is
people.
That?
Well, I mean, they're the bars that let people who are underage
in. Sure.
Yeah. And yes, we played high school places where you put an X on your hand. And all the high school. Back then, it was like, you know, hardcore straight edge girls who like, you know, they had the edge haircuts and, you know, like Taking Back Sunday was popular.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That scene kind of like, you know, melded with our little ska scene that we were trying to carve out in Charlotte. And then, you know.
Right. Because you guys were kind of outcast probably because like, what the fuck are these guys doing?
Yes.
Do they think they're Fishbone of North Carolina?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and like we got to open up for the ska bands that came through town just because there weren't any other ones.
Right. You carved out you saw the hole and you went for it.
Yeah. So, yeah, we played at like little bars in town like that would let underage kids play a show. And
did you have some kind of idea of what you were going to do when you were grew up at that point?
No.
Okay.
I still don't know.
So then you get deeper into music. You do that band, Andy and the Jivers.
Andy and the Jivers.
Jivers.
Or as one newspaper put it, I think maybe our school newspaper, Andy and the Rippers.
Oh, that's a good name too. That's when you guys turned from ska to metal.
Yeah.
You went to college for music stuff, right?
Yeah, so I went to East Carolina thinking I was going to be in construction management, and I went to the very first class there, and they were teaching about concrete, and I was bored out of my mind. I was like, no, this isn't for me, and I left, and I dropped out of that school, and I went to where my friend Andy was going at University of North Carolina at Asheville, and I got up there and I immediately felt at home. I met so many great people, so many musicians. Asheville's a very musical town. I was like, this is what I meant to do. And that really set me on the path I'm on now.
Yeah. Austin is like Asheville 30 years from now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Asheville will be Austin 30 years
with from a now. Much better climate and geography.
If it, I mean, this climate might get there by then. You never
it's
know.
Possible. Yeah. Let's pray it doesn't.
So there you started learning other instruments and stuff, and what was going on there in Nashville?
I had a basis in guitar kind of in high school, you know, just being in like the band, and you know, my friend Andy played guitar and I knew other people who played guitar, so I kind of started playing that when I was in high school. And I always wanted to play the bass because the trombone's a bass clef instrument, and right. I read bass clef, so trombone players and bass are like, they're very intertwined. I feel like a lot of trombone players can just pick up a bass and be like, oh yeah, this makes sense, because the trombone lines are the bass lines of like concert band.
Right.
So you're already, you have a foundation in it. So my uncle, also being a bass player, he sent me one of his extremely nice basses. He sent me a 74 Fender Jazz bass.
Jesus, what a cool dude.
Yeah, my uncle's really cool. He sent me that bass, and I started playing it from when I was 17, and that bass has already been all over the world with him, and I've taken it all over the country. I haven't been an internationally touring artist like he was, but I brought it all over the country with a different band after I moved to Austin, and that bass has magic in it. I'm a believer that like certain instruments just have magic to them.
Yeah.
That instrument has loads of magic in
that. That red Telecaster right there, I've had it since 1994.
I want to take a look at it.
It has magic in it. It also has complete, I mean, it's been like the inside is not what I got.
Yeah,
it's a lot different.
Sometimes
seeing some action, man.
It's like a car, you know. Sometimes you need to, you know, tune it up.
Yeah. So, all right. So you get out of college, and what was the dream? What was the idea?
When I graduated from college, I graduated with a bunch of buddies who were in the same program as me, and my dream is to open up a recording studio. So moving to Austin, I moved down here with another buddy of mine. He followed me down here about 6 months after I moved here. And I had already knew a bunch of people who moved here from Asheville.
Is that why you moved here?
Yeah, the reason I moved here is because
there's a little community here already.
There's already a little community from North Carolina down here. I already knew a handful of people who came down from Asheville, North Carolina.
And it's not as intimidating as like Nashville, New York, or LA.
No.
And at that point, it was a lot cheaper.
Yes. My first rent here was $282 a month.
Jesus, what, did you move here in 1972?
My God, that sounds
like totally like 70s.
Granted, this was a house that was infested with roaches, and we had a grandfather lease that was probably from 2000 at that point or something. You know, like it had just been passed down from people who had moved here for a long period of time.
Sure. So that's a typical Austin story from the history of Austin.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
The North Crest Boulevard house. I don't know. There might be some people who listen to that who might have lived there.
Yeah. Who knows? If you did, tweet at me. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. And you guys are on Twitter.
Yes.
A lot of people aren't on Twitter anymore. You notice that? A lot of bands. Why is that?
I guess it's because it's not as quick to digest. You know, like Instagram, you have the story.
they literally limit how much you can say. And it's still too much.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I guess the content, the way you digest content on Twitter is like way different. You know, it's like, you get those quick blips of something, but it's not really for music. It's like,
right.
You got to stop and digest it when it's music.
Right. Yeah, I guess so. All right. So you move here.
Yeah.
And where'd you start hanging out? Where'd you start? What was the scene that you started getting into?
Got a job working at Fifth Street Studios recording live shows.
Okay.
That was my very first job here. I worked there for probably a month. And they were long, hard days. I had to like wheel around a live recording rig that was worth more than my car and go to venues. And one of the first shows I recorded was Daniel Johnston.
No shit.
At Antone's, the one that was on Fifth Street. That was one of my
That was
one of the very first gigs I worked for them. And I was like, this is very cool. I love this.
Holy shit, man. It's legendary.
I was a great introduction to Austin, and you know, I didn't really get to do a lot of the actual engineering, so that I was kind of like hands and feet for them. So it kind of like rubbed me the wrong way, and I wasn't making enough money to like, it was like 12-hour days and I'd make like $50. I was like, this is cool, but I ended up getting a regular day job, and I formed Steady Legend, the very first incarnation.
What kind of day job did you get?
I worked for the state government, and I was swapping tape drives. Like physical hard tapes that the government backed up their data on.
Wow.
Yeah, like stuff out of the, you know, 70s and 80s.
Awesome.
That the government was still backing up their data on in 2011. And my first
government.
Good story about that. My first boss was Steve Bidwell, the drummer for Black Pumas.
He's a great drummer, huh?
Yeah, he's phenomenal. He has played some gigs with me. I had a little funk band going in like the mid-2010s. Now time's going so fast, and he's pocket 100%.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so you put together Steady Legend and
first incarnation. Nobody left from that era.
Nobody except you,
except for me.
Is that okay?
Yeah, I mean, Steady Legend has had, can't even count how many people play a show with us, and I think that's beautiful because everyone gets a little piece of it.
Right. Some people have a little like, man, what's it, the original guys, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. One of our original members like passed away a few years ago. He was in like a road rage accident in Austin. It was like in the news and stuff, and it was like, it really hit home to me because he was like one of my favorite original members who brought a lot of energy to the shows, and it's like, we've just been around a long time, and I'm like, some of the people aren't even alive anymore.
Right.
And that's like, it really like grounds you and makes you think like, wow, I've been doing this a long time, and like a lot of people have a connection to this because everyone who was in that group, their initial one, I reached out to everyone and told them that he had passed away, and they're like, oh my god, and it reconnected me with everybody from that original time.
Wow, sorry about that, but I'm glad that you got to reconnect with everyone. That's good.
That was, you know, you got to find the beauty in, in the sadness sometimes, and that was the beauty that came out of that. I got to reconnect with everybody. And
yeah, so where did you guys play your first gig?
Flamingo Cantina.
Okay. Ska place, reggae
place.
I've
played there so many times.
Yeah. How was it?
It's a good place.
How was it the first time?
The first time we had a great show.
Yeah.
We brought out, like, I mean, we had a 9-piece band when we first started.
Jesus.
So if 9 people bring 2 people, you at least have a little bit of a crowd. And I feel like a lot of people wanted to come see us because we were practicing for like 6 or 8 months before we played our first gig. So I'm sure everyone's telling all their friends, like, I'm in this new band. And when are you going to play a show? I don't know. We're just practicing. And so I think that we generated a little bit of buzz. And our first show was really awesome. I remember we opened for Rich Restaino and the Obits. They were the first band we opened for, and afterward, they made a really nice post on Facebook saying, like, that was their first show. It didn't seem like it. They seemed like they are sage veterans. I was like, oh, man, that's a really nice compliment.
Yeah, it's a good one. I like, when I heard you guys, first of all, let me ask you this.
Okay.
You ever listen to Dan Reed Network?
Dan Reed and Network. That's
Dan Reed Network.
Dan Reed Network. That's a band?
That was a band, like, in the late 80s.
It doesn't sound familiar, but I'm gonna go look them up now.
There's a vibe thing where if you were like, oh fuck yeah, I listen to Dan Reed all the time, I'd be like, okay,
Dan Reed. I gotta go listen to it now. I've never.
There's a song called "Get to You," and you'll get it. There's like, you know, it's funk. It's got a deep pocket. It's rock. You got a slapping bass player.
Yeah, that's
so. Sorry, I look at your band and I would categorize you in the like, if I were building a bill of bands with a thread of similarity through them, I would put Roxy Rocha,
okay,
Night Owls, you guys. Is that fair enough?
Well, I used to play bass in Soul Track Mind, if you've heard of that.
Right.
So that Roxy Rocha was like the, you know, a very similar band at the same time. So I would say yes, now is a fair comparison.
Sure.
We came from a different sound.
I'm not saying
sure.
You're like, I'm just saying like,
we've played with the Night Owls before. Sure. I know a couple people in that band. So yeah,
it's got the similar kind of, and I'm sure like when you do play covers or you play a wedding, there's a lot of
covers.
Stuff that's this, that, yeah.
But we try to do covers that are like not soul covers and make them.
Oh, that's like, cool. Like what?
Well, some of them we end up turning them, like, they're like, Tainted Love is a cover we do.
Oh.
Tainted Love was originally a soul song.
Right.
So like, that's an example, but like,
before it just,
yeah, Tainted Love. Ooh. Yeah, but we do like Sex and Candy. We don't really play as much anymore, but we turn that into a Latin song.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind
of
cool.
And I'm trying to think of all of our other covers. Like, we turned Valerie, that like the Amy Winehouse version, into a reggae song. Like, we do some covers straight up, but we also take some covers and turn them into a different vibe, give them a different color to them. And I like doing that because it makes it yours. It's not the original anymore.
Right. Yeah. I'm in a cover band and we try to do everything exactly like it, but I long
for the days of like band.
When I used to do. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Cover, I feel like there's a difference between covers and tributes.
Yeah. Okay. So when did you, like, when you started the band, were you do like, hey, I'm going to start this band and we're going to.
I was
go
winging
to the
it.
Top. Like, did you have, like, what kind of vision did you have for your band?
My first thought was, when I moved down here, I had the thought to, I had these songs I wrote in college that I never did much with. I just wrote them and didn't really do much with them. But when I moved down here, I was like, I got all these songs. Let me like polish them up and get a band together. And I was going to start an instrumental band that I might sing in a little bit. And our first singer, I was like, you know, I met her because I posted looking for horn players.
Instrumental, so like this kind of music, but
instrumental, but like instrumental. Like first wave ska, like the Skatalites. I was going to do like something like that.
Yeah.
And I had a singer message me and she's like, oh my God, I love ska. Can I come and sing with you? Like, I sound like Gwen Stefani. That was her like message to me. And she did, to her credit. She sounded like Gwen Stefani. So that kind of set us on the path. Was when I met her, I was like, okay, let me like tune these up to be more vocal friendly. And kind of like we wanted to sound like, you know, modern No Doubt kind of vibe. So that was kind of what changed my idea from, let me just figure out what I'm doing, to let's see what happens with her.
Okay. And then?
And then I got an opportunity to play with Soul Track Mind and make money because they were on the road.
Right.
And I kind of put Steady Legend on the back burner for a couple years.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I was going for. Because what I was going to ask was, there is a place where you can tell Steady Legend was doing some stuff. You made a record, and then there's like a gap area. And then I was like, I wonder if they went into like this private work where they're like, fuck, man, you know, we're making 8 times the amount of money, you know, playing a private thing than we do, you know, playing at Flamingo Cantina. It only makes sense to sort of like kind of focus on this.
There were just hiatuses where, I mean, I'm the driving force behind the band. So it's really like when I'm in, the band's in. And
right. So you took off with Soul Track Mind. Yeah. So of course, when you came back, everyone wasn't available
exactly.
then. So when you put it back together, it was a different
group. So that's when our current drummer, who's one of the only, like, he's like an OG to me now, he joined up. I actually was starting a cover band with a friend of mine that never went anywhere. And we auditioned him off of Craigslist. I've met most of the band off of Craigslist, honestly. And I just called him up one day. I was like, man, that audition for the cover band, that was really cool, but like, we're not going to do that. So do you want to play in this other band I'm starting up? And he was game, and he had never played anything. Like, he was like a rock and roll drummer. And over the course of 8 years, he's like become a badass drummer of like so many different styles. His name's Omar. Okay. Omar's a crucial part of the band. If Omar ever left the band, I would really have to sit down and be like, do I want to still do this anymore? Because you have to have like a rock in the band who's like your guy.
Yeah.
Omar's my
guy. Fuck yeah. You hear that, Omar? What's his last name?
Avitia.
Omar Avitia?
Yeah.
You better stay in the band or, you know, this podcast is a waste.
I'm telling him this because he just moved to New Braunfels and he's got a 2-year-old. So I'm like, stay, dude, stay.
Yeah. Life, man. Because like rock, I never had kids. Like I was married for like 10 years. I was like, I never had kids. So
I got
still
one on the way.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
So I'm still like, you know, hey man, let's jam. It's gonna be cool on Wednesday, you know. I just simulated smoking weed. That's what I'm sure you heard it.
You know, I think everybody's path is valid.
Yeah.
You can still do what you want. It's just up to you to do it.
Yeah. So you're going to have a kid?
Yes.
Do you know what kind?
It's a boy.
Okay.
I hope he has rhythm.
Yeah.
Because I want to teach him how to play.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the mom?
My wife.
Yeah, your wife.
Yeah.
What's her musical background?
None.
Oh, okay. So it's a 50-50. It's a gamble.
Yes.
This kid's like a gamble. He's either going to come out jamming or not.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, there really isn't anybody too musical on her side of the family. Her cousin's in a band called, they're like a super popular metal band. I can't remember.
You're in town?
No, they're from, I can't remember, California or something. They're massive. They tour the world.
Oh.
They're huge. So there is music in her family, but a little bit extended.
Yeah.
He's a bass player. God, I can't remember. They had a vicious van accident and their drummer like lost their leg and they were in like a mag. Like, I can't remember what their name is right now. I can look them up.
Haven't heard that. No, you don't have to right now.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. So,
here I am talking about other people.
No, it's all right. It's good. You know, filling in the cracks, who's the band? And then of course, like, who are you? Of course, you know, like having a kid and then who's the mom person?
Yeah.
And then you told me your wife.
Yeah.
I knew. I figured it probably was.
Yeah, I'm wearing a ring.
No, I meant professionally, who is she? So you come back to the band. What was the reason for that? Soul Track Mind stopped or kept
the
going?
The band kind of went through a transition. So a lot of the guys that I was in the band with, we kind of came to a precipice of,
it's know. Almost like, how transitioning is it? Sorry.
Yeah.
So it's like the band transitioned from like soul and funk to like death metal.
Really, it's just like the singer wanted to have a different band. Okay. It just really boils down to that. He wanted, like, the way they put it with me, they wanted to try different musicians. Sure. And, you know, I still keep in touch with most of the guys who I was in the band with.
And that's not something, I've done that as a singer guy, where I did it last year and I kind of hurt the feelings of everyone I'd been playing with for the last few years. And I was like, hey, first of all, just me. Nobody lives off of this fucking thing that I do, you know, on my
It's
own.
Always going to be raw when, like, people put their emotions into it. But, you know, ultimately, somebody's out there singing it, somebody's writing it, and, you know, they're the head honcho.
Yeah.
And they
and it's nothing bad. I want to play with those guys again, but I'm just like right now, I kind of like this.
I know that. So that happened. And then I kind of like went through a shitty time in my life. So I wrote a bunch of songs. I had a bunch of other crap happen to me. Like it all kind of hit me at once. Like I went through a breakup and my dad was sick. He went through chemo. And so like, I just like was really emotional and like alone. I had I was really busy all the time when I was with Soultrak, and I was dating a girl. So like when I was home, I was like with her. Yeah. And when I was with Soultrak, I was like on the road or playing, and like I had my job that would work. So I was like, I had like every minute of my day was like, you know, accounted for to like tons of free time. And like your idle mind is like
the artist's worst enemy.
Yeah, exactly. So like I started writing, and that really helped me through that time, and I wrote like most of the first album, First Day of Legend, during that time.
Awesome.
Good chunk of it, at least.
Yeah. And
I took some older songs we had played from the first incarnation, changed them up a little bit, and we recorded that album with the new outfit, you know, with Omar playing drums and the outfit we had back then. So it was a, you know, good kind of, it took me a few months to figure out I wanted to do Steady Legend again, but like I was like, this is my baby and I'm gonna bring it back.
Wow, it's pretty awesome. Are you happy about it?
Yeah.
You happy with it?
It's a love hate, you know, like sometimes I like, you know, it's a big band and I rely on a lot of people to make it happen. So sometimes I have a hate relationship with it where I'm like, I have to rely on people, and like every single person has their own baggage they bring. And so like right before a gig, there might be issues, there's drama, there's, you know, just unreliability, and you're always trying to plug holes. Like I felt like for the longest time, I'm just plugging holes in the band and we're never making any progress.
It's the least, God, I'm so glad you brought that up, because that is a thing that most of us go through. Like when you have a band, it goes through phases where you feel like the needle's moving.
Yeah.
And then there's other times where you're just fucking holding the needle from
from flying off the
your head, cutting your head off by coming backwards. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like a lot, especially band leaders, feel that, because
you feel that
the pressure is on you. Like when you book a gig or you have you know, you're the one that needs to show up. You're the one that's
My cat's sick, man. Yeah, I can't make rehearsal. Exactly. You're like, dude, this is a fucking gig.
I've heard so
what?
Many
it's
things.
Just a Wednesday.
Yeah.
But every gig is
important.
Is New Year's Eve if that's what concerns you.
Yeah, I booked this to play it. I didn't book it to maybe play it.
Yeah, like how we both just got like actually mad. We got into
the
feeling.
Stories. I got stories, man. I don't mean to disparage people, but
No. That's it. We're not disparaging anyone. Yeah. We're just saying like in our position, maybe if they're hearing this for the first time, they're like, oh shit.
I didn't
think about it that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the thing is like, you know, we're all in those positions where like with your parents, like when you're a kid, you're like, oh, my dad's being such a dick, but like that dude's having a hard time at work.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Don't know if he can keep his job and
you
support
don't know
his fucking family and keep his house. Like, it's different than the time you're having. Like, just being a dick.
Well, just like, you know, I have grown as a band leader in that I have a really high expectations of the people I work with, because we don't rehearse a lot. We rehearse once a week when we are going. And I expect everyone to show up and like be prepared and have the songs prepared. Like I send out an agenda and like, you know, I recently, like our bass player was having a hard time. Like he'd show up to practice and like he was like throwing his gear around and I'm like, what's going on, man? And like we got through the practice and like I kind of pulled him aside and like he's a good friend of mine now. And I'm like, I don't even care about the practice. Like what's going on with you?
Right.
And you know, I may have not done that in my younger days. I may be like, you know, screw this. I'm gonna go find another bass player.
Right.
You know, and like, so now the problem was like he, you know, has a hard time getting to practice. So I take him to practice now and we get there on time and he's in a much better mood.
Yeah.
Like every time I bring him to practice, he plays a lot better.
That's great. That's the, you know, psychology, parenting.
Well, it's like I'm not
already good at it.
I'm not just the band leader. I'm also like the band dad.
Yeah. I get it, man. How often do you guys? I mean, it seems like you get around and play. You know, you get around the state.
It's up and down. It's up and down. You know, like right
well, yeah,
now.
Yeah, it's been for all of us since.
You know, COVID put the brakes on everything we had going on. Like, we had a great 2019, played all over the state, and then we recorded the EP. The EP was recorded in 2019.
I know.
And I was going to release it. We were like a South by standby artist, and we were going to release our EP and like have a really great 2020. And it was like, no, you're not. You're not going to do anything this year. So, you know, we pretty much just sat on our hands for a couple of years, you know, and I kind of regret that because we could have been writing new songs. We could have been doing more, but I feel like the whole tone of the world was like, do nothing.
You know, that's such a funny thing because I talked to so many people. That happened to me. I mean, I did some co-writing with other people. Mm-hmm. I wrote some songs and released them in 2021 and stuff. A handful, not a lot, like an album. I just did a few singles, but like there was that whole like kind of, I did a shitload of podcasting because mm-hmm. like it was easier to do on
Zoom. Yeah, and you can do it
over
Zoom.
And I can do it over all over the world and whatever. But you're like, there was part of you was like, okay, well now I've got the time to do like the greatest shit anyone's ever done. And then you're like, but you're so uncomfortable.
I know.
Because of the way the world was at the time that like some people, I saw some people really dig in.
Yeah.
And
I did too.
And I hated them for it.
I couldn't find that motivation. Honestly, I'll admit it. I got lazy.
Sorry, but like, you know, I mean, also like, didn't you get tired of the fucking Trump songs and
yeah,
all the songs? And
I just, the whole world was just giving me these vibes that I'm like, even if I do anything, this was really why I probably got lazy was like, even if I like put out this great record, I can't tour to promote it.
Right.
I can't get any shows at all, so what's the point? Like, nobody's gonna listen to it. People are like, they're inundated with music as it is. Like, you have to cut through somehow, and in COVID times it's like, how are you going to cut through? I can't really think of how many, like, I feel like all the music's coming out now, all the cool movies are coming out now, like stuff that was held back during
there
COVID.
Is yeah. You know what, I talked to somebody just yesterday for the podcast that that their record was one that they made in like the fall of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember who it was. Oh, I know who it was. A Fragile Tomorrow. Have you ever heard them? They were really great. All right. So then when did you get back going? Last year?
We played our first show again in April 2021.
Well, really, that's pretty early.
Yeah. It was really like a dipping the toe in the water. Like, how is this going to go? And we had a couple other shows booked after that to kind of like get the wheels turning again. And one of them got canceled. And then the other one got canceled.
Oh, because of Delta stuff.
Yeah, we just never got going again. And so we kind of just sat on our hands again in 2021. And all the while I've had this EP done and ready to go. And I'm like, I'm not going to release this until the time is right. Like, I'm just going to be patient and I'm going to wait. And when the time is right, it will see the light of day. And that's what happened this year. I was like, all right, screw it. COVID seems to be over now.
Right.
And it's time to get this out there. And I actually, like, my whole impetus for it was book a release show and release it around the release show. And I actually had a really hard time booking a release show. I reached out to, like, every venue we played at before.
Well, then the curse of summer 2022 is that everybody and their mother is playing. Like, a friend of mine is doing, like, tour direction and production for Duran Duran.
Oh, wow.
And in August. And like it took him a month to find a bus.
Wow.
Let alone two.
Well, and also so many venues closed that bigger bands are playing smaller rooms. So that's like the local bands who usually would have occupied that mid-level venue space are fighting with national touring acts now. So it's changed the whole dynamic.
Where were you guys playing like prior to 2020? Like on the regs here in town?
Stubbs was one of Stubbs Indoor was one of our regular spots, and they're not even booking anymore.
They're not?
They're not even, no.
They don't have shows in there?
The indoor space, no.
Really?
I've hit them up so many times. I wanted to have our release show there, and they aren't even open anymore. And yeah, that kind of leads us to the release show. I ended up booking at the Green Jay. I heard that
the
GM of Stubbs opened that place.
Right,
and so he was really responsive. I think his name's Ryan. He like got back to me right away.
I think,
like,
I met him at a party there during South By. That's a good place. I went there. I saw some music there.
I'm excited to do it. It's a small room with a smaller stage, and we're a big band, but I'm hoping that it's just packed and sweaty, and we just rock.
That's the kind of music you play. That's the cool thing about, like, when I was in a band like that. I want to show you the photo, because I found it at my grandma's house the other day. This is 1989. But you could tell, like, we were having a good time.
All right, which one's you?
I'm the guy in the middle.
Middle, yes.
With all the hair and the
This is so 90s.
I still rolled my pants up. Look at that. I haven't rolled them up my whole life.
And you got your checkerboard shoes now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, it's that's very 90s.
But that kind of band, it's like being like a salsa band. Like, the doors open to you, and it's not like a singer-songwriter where someone has to get into your fucking point of view or into your guitar drum. You have a thing that's based on, like, rhythm.
Yeah.
So therefore, no matter what you're singing on top of it, there's celebration involved with it just from the get-go.
You just hear horns and rhythm, and the right people are going to click, and they're going to be like, that's what I want to hear right now.
Dude, I have to say, this song, Bad Boy, is really a great song, man.
You like it?
Yeah.
I wrote that song about when I first got a guitar. I bought this new guitar, and this guitar had that song in it. It just...
Came with the song.
Yeah, I wrote that song. I bought this acoustic guitar. It was a Guild, and I had it the very first day, and I wrote that song the very first day I had that guitar. I was like, this song was just in this guitar. Like, whoa. And came right out of me. I worked on the lyrics with the singer to get kind of everything put together, and that song came together pretty fast.
Your singer's name's Alisa?
Annalisa.
Annalisa, sorry.
Yes.
Annalisa.
Yes.
Annalisa Gomez.
Gonzalez.
Gonzalez, sorry. Look at your fucking notes. Why sometimes, and I'm Hispanic, why sometimes is it a Z or an S? That's a question probably better for her.
That's a better question.
She might not even know.
She might not know. I don't think she would.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah. I don't know. Okay, so you're going to put this out. You got this release show. Do you have release shows anywhere else? I saw you play like Brian.
We play in Brian.
At that theater place?
Yeah, the Palace
Theater. What's it called now?
The Palace Theater. Okay, they're actually shutting it down and like remodeling it as a movie theater. So I don't know if that's even going to be a thing anymore.
Oh.
But last time we played there in November.
But it's that one that's in the corner, and then there's a club across the street behind it? And you load in through the back, right onto the stage?
It's like a brick wall.
Yeah.
Seating.
Yeah.
Kind of a little courtyard. On the side.
I think so.
Also like another.
It used to be called, I can't remember. Stafford Opera.
Grand Stafford. Yes. Okay. There is a venue there called, I think they're related, but they're not the same. We've also played in Bryan a lot. We played at the Texas Reds Festival there. It's a great town to play.
Well, that's because, it's a great town when you bring the party with your band, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's the same thing Ryan and in Night Owls, like, he and I have that conversation all the time. It's like, there is a certain in for you.
Yes, there's a path.
Yeah.
That's like we do, but we also don't, because like we are not in like a... There's paths of music. Like I've noticed it in like the reggae scene is like we opened for Revolution at Emo's East in 2019. That was like one of the biggest stages we played on.
I saw that.
As a sold out show. It was awesome. But we weren't as much of a reggae band then anymore. So it felt a little shoehorned for us to be there. But we still put on a good show. We play some older songs, like some reggae tunes that we used to play to kind of fit the vibe a little better. But like Revolution and like bands like them drag along a whole scene. And certain bands bring a scene, you know, like they're just like there's a pathway for you. And once you fall into that, the industry finds you. There's a pathway for you. And I've been struggling to be like, where is Steady Legend's path? Like, where is this EP going to take us? Is there a group of bands that we can be lumped with, maybe go on like a little tour with, and like, or be played with on a playlist?
Right.
And I've been struggling with that, and that's like a tough thing to, you know, be able to manufacture.
It's tough because you are a funk band, wouldn't you say that? A funk rock band?
We're a multi-genre act, I feel like, because we play everything from like a rock song to a funk song to a soul song to a reggae song, you know, and it all comes together in like a cosmic gumbo.
Right. Maybe that's what it is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's tough because we flirt the line with being like almost a cover band sometimes, because we've got like 50 covers we can do. But we also have, the original songs, and we can do an entirely original set.
When somebody comes to your EP release party, are you like, how long of a set are you playing? What, an hour?
Like a 75, probably. Okay. Maybe an hour with some extras if the crowd's digging it.
Cover?
We have like two or three covers in the set. It's going to be mostly original.
What are the covers?
We got a cover of an old soul song called I Get Lifted.
Okay.
And we funk it up a little. It bangs. It's a
jam. But that's a song like if somebody didn't know.
It goes, I get lifted.
Right, but they could come, they'd think it was yours.
Maybe.
It's not like you're doing Tears of a Clown or something.
A real music, like a music person would be like, I know that song. Okay. Like I know people who know that song. We also do I Wish by Stevie Wonder. I feel like some people are going to know that one. What else are we doing? We're doing a Bill Withers song. and a Sharon Jones song. Okay. That's a cover of like an old 70s rock song called I Just Dropped In to See What My What Condition My Condition Is In.
Kenny Rogers wrote that fucking song.
That's a great jam.
Yeah, sweet jam. And of course, the record has four songs on it.
Yes, there was more that didn't make it.
Are you going to do something with those guys?
Yeah, they'll probably be dropped as singles later on down the road.
What are you guys looking at right now? Like, I know you got the release of the album, the release shows, but what then, like, what's on the back burner right now for you?
I want to play as many shows and write as many songs as possible before my kid's born.
Okay, and that kid's born when?
October.
Okay. Well, what day? But do you know the due date?
Do you know? I don't know. The due date's the 27th.
Okay.
I was like, do you know the future? I would like to know what day.
No, my birthday's the 14th, and I just want to know if the baby's being born on my birthday.
I'd like for him to be a Libra, but, you know. He'd have to be a little early.
No, don't. Just, you know, whenever he's going to come.
Yeah, that's the right day.
Yeah.
But so we're going to play as many shows as we can. I've got some new songs that I've written. It's just tough to, like, bring them to a large band. I have to, like, do a lot more legwork to, like, have them ready before I bring them to the full band.
How do you do that? How do you present? You don't just walk in with your guitar and start kind of, like, humming a thing. You write out horn charts and shit?
Usually before I bring it to the band fully, I will have a horn chart made so that there's at least, and I'll take it back and work on it afterward, but I like to have at least a roadmap for a song. I'd like to have that map take us from point A to point B before I bring it to the full band. I might bring a really rough idea to the singer and we work on it together.
Right.
And that, you know, that might be just like, I've got a melody. Let's see where this goes. But the full band is like, I've got eight people in a room. I need to have more than just humming a melody. I've got everybody here. We need to do more work.
Well, and I'm sure also, like, there's a little bit more pressure on Annalisa at this point because, like, she's the person singing the songs.
Yeah.
So, like, you can't really do much without her.
No. We could. We've played shows without her before just out of necessity because she hasn't been able to make it at, like, last minute. And I've sung the songs myself and shortened the set a lot. But we've done it before. It's been at Stubbs both times, ironically.
Yeah.
But no, the pressure on her is really like kind of becoming the focal point. Like, you know, we had KUTX Song of the Day and the whole blurb was about her becoming the singer of the band. So I feel like that.
Is she comfortable with that?
I hope so.
How are you with that? And you're the guy that started the band and did the whole thing. And
I don't want any credit.
Okay.
I want to have a cool band that I can play with when it's, you know, honestly convenient for me because
guitarist with mystique.
I don't need, I mean, I like having the credit of being the songwriter.
Yeah.
I don't really need the performance credit. I'm not that great of a guitar player. I write good songs. That's where I want my credit to be.
You do.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And that's the thing I feel like I'm best at. Like, there's musicians that are better than me at every single instrument that I've ever, you know.
Me too.
And that's what I want. Those are the people I want to play my songs.
Yeah.
I rather, here's the tools. Go make this better than I made it. Yeah. And so I'd honestly love to have the band and I'm not even playing in it anymore. I just, you know, have like a subsidiary and I'm like, I play when like the cool gigs. I play the cherry gigs.
Brian Wilson or something?
Yeah, yeah. I play the cherry gigs.
Well, all you have to have is like a mental breakdown on the road.
I got to sit in my bed for a few years.
But you'll still be so important to the band that they can't go on without you, but they can travel without you, but you got to still stay home and make records.
Right, yeah. I don't know if that'll ever come to that. I feel like it's still at this point, like they wouldn't play a gig without me. It would be a disaster.
So when you have your son, you're going to not play for a while?
I need to figure that out. I don't know what that's going to look like. I don't know what, like, you know, support and, you know.
Nobody does, do they?
No.
Nobody does until it happens. That's what I've heard.
I'm not making any assumptions. I feel like, you know, my wife's really awesome. I love my wife so much. But she's going to probably be supportive of me still playing.
Yeah.
But there's going to be a time period where there's a transition where I'm probably not going to be able to play.
Well, where you're like, oh, I'm going to be at Flamingo Cantina, like, you know, yucking it up with the gang over here. And she's going to be like, well, hey, buddy, someone's got to watch this kid.
Yeah.
And not just me the whole time.
She's one of the people who's going to listen to this. She's a guaranteed listener. So
what's her name?
Maureen.
Hey, Maureen.
Yeah.
It's Johnny. Good to meet you.
On
the show.
So what were we talking about? Oh, in between, when the baby's born.
Talking about, yeah.
Yeah, I got to, there's just going to be a time where I have to just sit back and absorb the change in my life.
That's really, how old are you?
34.
You're a grown guy.
Oh, I think
that's an era where you take a step maturity wise, the early 30s.
I get, you know, called Papa Mike by so many different people.
Well, you've always had the burden of like running this band and making sure. How much do you guys play, like privately? Like how many gigs a month do you play now?
Not many.
No.
We get offered more than we play. You know, there's
opportunity. Why are you turning? Because it's not enough money.
I have an 8-piece band. And like most of the people,
I'm in a 7-piece. I know. Yeah. I know. I know.
And
what you mean.
I don't want to just bring people out for beer anymore. You know, most of the people in the band are, you know, in their 30s and very talented. And like we just don't want to go play nothing for nobody. Like the gig's got to be worth our time. And I want it to be good as well. You know, sometimes we get an offer to gig and like I'm just like the band's not going to be ready for that. So I hold us back sometimes.
Do you? Or do you think you're making like legitimate smart decisions to not go slumming it? Because sometimes when you lay down with the dogs, you get up with the fleas.
Well, the band went through a phase where we just accepted everything So I
and
feel
that didn't get you anywhere.
It didn't. It's
and
just,
it lowers your value in that
yeah,
way.
Yeah, you do cheapen yourself a little.
Other people that would give you more are like, well, why do I have to do
yeah,
this?
Yeah, why are you playing there? You know, yeah, like
I don't have to give you what you want.
You do have to be selective, and you know, it's not that I don't want to play, it's just like playing till 2 a.m. when I'm, you know, I got to work the next day. Like I have a legitimate day job now. And I'm like, it's just not worth it. Like when I was 22 and I loved it. I loved that life when I was 22.
Yeah.
That was what I lived for.
Yeah. This guy worked at Whole Foods like 5 days a week, like 7 to 3, and would go home and take a nap and go to rehearsal. Cause we rehearsed of like 4 or 5 days a week. Because you know what I mean? Like I was like, yeah. I'm doing it. This is it. Like we got a rehearsal room. Why aren't we in there every day?
Yeah.
So then I would go out and like hit the town and, you know, get home, go to sleep at like 4, get up at 7, go to work, come home, take a nap, go to rehearsal, do the same thing. It was great.
It's a real old Austin kind of lifestyle.
It was in Houston too.
Oh, Houston.
Believe it or
Houston.
Not. Yeah.
Well, You can't really do that here anymore, and I feel like we could get into a whole other conversation.
No, I have so many conversations with people about that sort of thing. Is that I came up in this model of like, you know, you two or something, like you get in a band. You're not like the drummer in like 7 bands. You're the fucking you're the guy from this band. Like
that's your job.
Yeah,
and you could support yourself.
You
didn't have to like have 5 different bands. And
yeah.
Like, and I deal with that with just musicians. It's like you got to be in 3 or 4 different groups just to make ends meet if you're a full-time musician.
But it's interesting because I feel like the mentality has changed such because we were actually needing to go reach for a brass ring because we couldn't do the stuff that like we couldn't get our song on a playlist. We couldn't get our video on anywhere you could see it then unless you had the guys that ran everything in your corner. And so I feel like there was a little bit more of like now the brass ring isn't as awesome.
I don't think that there's as many opportunities now. It's like we're spread out. Like maybe the brass ring is now like made out of, I don't know.
It's just not. You're not going to get in a band and end up living in castles like Led Zeppelin.
No.
If you're in a band in 2022 that's just now launching their thing.
No. You have to be not just in a band.
You have to own like a bottled water
or
company.
Be a star. You know, you're an Instagram influencer more so than anything.
I hate social media.
Yeah. It's a necessary evil. If I didn't have a band, I wouldn't have a Facebook.
I wouldn't either.
I would have an Instagram to see all of my friends' Instagrams.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no way. I feel like we've had a really good conversation and I want Annalisa to be part of it, but I don't know where she is.
She may have texted me.
She may have. What do you think she said? Dear, do you go by Michael or Mike?
Mike.
Okay.
She said, someone hit my car in the garage. I guess I'm going to miss out.
Jesus.
She's had a hell of a day, apparently.
And that's not the best way to end a hell of a day.
I'm going to reach out to her after this.
I would do that if I were you. Here we go.
Yeah.
Papa Mike.
Papa Mike. Taking care of my
rescue.
People.
Hey, man, it's been really great talking to you.
Yeah, Johnny,
you're a really nice guy, really talented guy,
thank you.
And
I really appreciate you inviting me on here, man. I hadn't heard of your podcast before, I admit it, but like once
that
I like
pisses me off.
I dug into it
and won awards and shit.
I'm actually really sad that I hadn't because I probably would have listened to your podcast a lot more often because you're really in it, man. Like you're really
Thank you, I am.
Yeah, like you know a lot of the people here and you're like It's awesome, dude.
Yeah,
I'm really sad we haven't met before.
No, it's, you know, hey.
You also know my keyboard player who played on the record, Andy Nolte.
Oh, dude, he played on my...
He told me specifically not to mention him until the end. Okay. Because he said, like, he's going to talk about it. Because
that's all I'll talk about. Yeah. No, dude, there's nothing. That guy...
Phenomenal talent.
That guy's like the Van Dyke Parks of Austin. You know who that guy is?
No.
He's this string arranger guy from the 60s. Did all this work with, oh, wow, with the Beach Boys.
He plays with like so many people.
He plays on every... You know what? I've seen him do it. Okay. You're lucky to have a dude like that. He's amazing.
He is. And I'm just happy he digs my stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. I dig your stuff, dude. Everyone get out there and check out the album Say Hey, or the EP Say Hey, featuring the single Bad Boy, which is available. All the songs are out now, right?
They're on... It's out on... July 1st.
July 1st.
Yes. Yeah,
this will
the
come
day
out.
Before the EP release. It's all.
Oh, this is coming out on Tuesday. So,
July 1st is a Friday.
Friday is when it comes out.
The 2nd of July, yeah, is the EP release. It's a Saturday.
Saturday, July 2nd, Green Jay Bar. Everyone get out there. Go to steadylegend.com for all of your Steady Legend needs. Great talking to you, Mike.
Thanks, Johnny.
Yeah, buddy. You were in anything. That's Michael Mancuso from the band Steady Legend. Pick up their EP this Friday, July 1st. It's called Say Hey. Fantastic, fantastic EP produced by the great CJ Erickson. You can check out their song Bad Boy, which you're hearing right now on the show, wherever it is you stream and download your jams, as that single is out now. And don't forget to go see them this Saturday if you live in Austin at their EP release party, Saturday, July 2nd at Green Jay Bar. Go to steadylegend.com for all of your Steady Legend needs. I want to thank Michael for taking the time and coming and sitting down and talk to me. I had a great time getting to know that dude, and I can't wait to see this band live. I love a big band. I do. I love a big band. Hey, gang, don't forget when you're out there checking out steadylegend.com, you can subscribe to this podcast wherever it is that you find podcasts. Do it. Do it. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Overcast, anywhere. New shows every Tuesday and every Friday. Next week, we're actually dropping three shows. Three shows next week, all right? Check out Steady Legend. Have a great week. Whatever it is you're doing, let's get down. I was lonely.